Hello, and welcome to the Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And we're here to talk about the final stage race on the World Tour calendar for 2016, the Eneco Tour.
Yeah, the massively underrated Eneco Tour.
Agreed.
I feel like they do a great job kind of taking the classic season, which is sort of, as Ted King once pointed out, and as I like to highlight, a fourth Grand Tour, and compressing it into this 1 week, I don't want to say preview, I don't want to say recap, but it takes a lot of the elements of the what makes spring racing great and puts it into a week-long stage race, and also gives people who missed out during classic season an excellent chance for revenge.
Yeah, and it's not only is it like a reminder, it's also kind of a museum of classics gone by, because they're now the like the main World Tour level climb of the Miervaart-Gerritsbergen, which is no longer in the Tour of Flanders, and they sort of rescued it, rehabilitated it.
And they did it in a way that is just so loving. Like, they didn't just say, we're going to finish up this thing or we're going to go over it. There's this series of circuits around it that really captures that Tour of Flanders spirit. It really delivers. It takes a good element of bike racing and makes it a great element of bike racing by putting it in the sort of environment and the sort of course that really maximizes the ability of something like the Miervaart-Gerritsbergen to make a race cool.
Yeah, it's a really fitting finale for this race. That little bit about it being the final World Tour stage race is pretty important. One, it's important every year that this is a World Tour race, because that's basically what draws riders here, is the fact that it's a World Tour race. The UCI said, okay, we're going to make this a World Tour race, and now you get a good start list. That's kind of what happens, and that's true every year. But this is especially true this year, because for the first time in a little while, World Tour points, they actually are kind of important right now. As far as we know, until the UCI says otherwise, they appear to be going forward with this plan to cut down to 17 World Tour teams next year. And that's going to leave one team that wants to be at the top level on the outside looking in, because you've got Bora and the new Bahrain team hoping to get the World Tour bump. And with only two teams leaving the World Tour, Tinkoff and YAM Cycling, there's one team is going to be left out. And so World Tour points are suddenly really important. And the last couple of years, they haven't seemed all that big of a deal. But now all of a sudden, there's a race, there's a scramble to get World Tour points. And this is the opportunity, because the only other race after this is Lombardia, which is a one-day race.
And I like the idea of there being these points that are important, but I wish they were important kind of throughout the season. I mean, they technically are, but it's not like people in February or March or April or even early August were like, hey, how about those World Tour points? And now it's, holy cow, we need some World Tour points.
You know, I think a lot of that is just the way the calendar works, the way the races that are at this part of the calendar as opposed to the earlier calendar. And I think that might change a little bit next year, because the way it is, and the way it has been for the last couple of years, there are a number of races in the second half of the season that a lot of people would consider like second rate. You know, they're not the classic or the prestigious big races of cycling. They're the races that have kind of been elevated to that level thanks to having World Tour status, and they happen to be towards the end of the year. So, yeah, if you had those kinds of races at the beginning of the year, I think people might say, well, we're going to go there because we need those World Tour points. In any case, this year, the last several weeks, we've seen guys going hard that maybe, you know, we might not have seen. I mean, Dimension Data is the team that really needs World Tour points the most. They're struggling. They're in last place by a country mile, really. Mostly because Mark Cavendish's Tour de France was pretty much the only thing they've done all year at the World Tour level. If you're going to be a World Tour team, you'd think you'd want to focus on some World Tour races. And they've done a lot of this, Middle Eastern one-weekers or Tour of Britain kind of thing, where they have big success, but it doesn't win you any World Tour points. So I think a lot of people who are critics or haters of the World Tour are going to take issue with the fact that Dimension Data is in the basement right now. But they kind of dug their own grave here, because they knew that the races they were focusing on weren't going to give them World Tour points. You know, that's the whole idea of the World Tour, is to incentivize going to these races. And that's what we're seeing right here. I mean, you're seeing it working. You're seeing it in action right here, because the start list for the Eneco Tour is fantastic. And I think you're going to see a lot of guys going for every opportunity they can, because they know the World Tour points are a big deal. And that's a success for the World Tour to me.
No, I think you're exactly right. And I think on a couple of levels, not just because I'm the sort of person who likes to blame the Tour de France for everything, but this is kind of the Tour de France's fault, because they had a great Tour de France. They had Cavendish looking better than I think we've ever seen him look. They had Steve Cummings riding great, taking a stage win. But at the same time, like, that's just the Tour. It's just another World Tour race. Like, in terms of marketing dollars, super valuable. In terms of, you know, Steve Cummings' future career, super valuable. In terms of exposure for their sponsors, super valuable. But in terms of World Tour points, not that valuable. And the thing that you mentioned about all these races after the Tour kind of seeming second tier, I think is the Tour's fault, because this, the Tour de France being the apex of the season, it happens in the middle of the year. You know, like, imagine if the playoffs in baseball happened during the All-Star break. Who would care about what happens in September? I really wish that the World Tour, like, I agree with you. I think this is a win for the World Tour, but I think it may be a Pyrrhic victory, because as significant as the World Tour is becoming right this second, I don't think it's having an impact on the Tour de France. I don't think it's really changing that weighting.
Yeah. I think the goal should probably not even be that lofty, because I don't know that they're ever going to change that. I think the goal should be what they're doing now, which is accepting that the Tour is always going to be the big kahuna, but also placing enough value on the other races that you're still going to get marquee names. And I think they're achieving that goal, because you're right. The Tour is the Tour. It's not going to change. And I don't think anything the World Tour is going to do is going to make a difference there, but I think it's achieving its goal. I think we're seeing that. We saw in Canada, we saw some big names going head to head in Canada. They were really great races, both of them. And by the way, we did call Greg Van Avermaet winning that second race after he spoke to the Recon Ride. So I'm hoping he takes that as motivation to talk to us before every race.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I think he should clearly see that is causation and not correlation.
It's not correlation, no. In any case, he's one of the riders here at the Eneco Tour. So is Peter Sagan. So are a number of other big stars on the provisional start list, at least. So let's actually get a little deeper into the Eneco Tour this year. We'll talk route and then we'll talk favorites. The Eneco Tour is 7 stages long, as we've mentioned. It's very classic-y. It's a race that runs through classics country in Belgium and the Netherlands. Kicks off with a flat stage, which then leads into, well, it's a time trial, but it's like a prologue length. It's just not the first stage of the race. 9.6 kilometers. I love that, because I love short time trials. It's a special skill. And I like the length for this race, because any longer and it would have an outsized impact on the race, I think.
Yeah, and I really love this, because normally with the prologue, you're like, oh, the sprinters will try to do well, so they're within striking distance. Whereas here, the sprinters have already done their thing. So there's going to be a guy leading the race who is going to be okay at a short TT, because he's got a lot of power, but he's not going to be a specialist. So you're going to see him. You're going to see guys who maybe didn't win, who are close to the front, who are, again, like, they're not the specialist, but they have the ability to do okay here. You're going to see them trying probably harder than they ever try at a sustained effort anywhere else in their competitive exertions. So I think it's going to be really cool.
Stage 3, probably another stage for those fast finishers. Stage 4 as well, another flattish kind of stage. Of course, we're Benelux here, so yeah, you never really know. I mean,
we're pretty close to the ocean for some of these too, so yeah. Wind will be a factor.
Yeah, absolutely. Stage 5, you know how I said that I love the stage 2 prologue because it's the right length? Stage 5 I hate because it's a team time trial, which, as you know, if you listen to the show you already know that I don't like those, but it's like 20k long. That's way too long for a 7-day race with no real climbs. I'm a little concerned that this is going to have too big of an impact on the race.
See, I don't necessarily think it's gonna, like, this is not, I don't feel it's that long. It's not, it's certainly not Tour de France length TT. It's relatively non-technical. I think it's really cool that the race is willing to experiment like this. This is certainly nothing like the rest of the classics classic playbook. Or classics, but this is nothing like the rest of the racing you see in March and April that this really sort of emulates. And I like the willingness to take a risk like this. I think 20K is the right distance. It will have an impact. It will not be the be all and end all of the event.
I'm a little concerned that a smaller or a less TTT-oriented squad is going to be blown out in this. I mean, 20K is not long for a Grand Tour, but I guess we'll find out. Stage 6, it's one of the two hillier days. It's a stage that runs through the Ardennes and Belgian Limburg, so very hillier parts of the Low Countries. Not mountainous, but hard enough that we're going to see some gaps at the finish. I mean, this is often where this race is decided when they visit this part of the Low Countries.
Yeah, by the numbers, it's certainly the biggest climbing, I think.
Stage 7 is the Deronda Redux. They visit the Mur a couple of times. They finish halfway up the Mur von Gerardsbergen. And it's a tough stage, and they might not have quite the metrics of some of those climbs that you're going to see in Limburg, but you're going to deal with cobblestones as well. This is classics, and I think the kind of thing that people really love to see in this race.
Yeah, this is, I mean, like I was saying in the intro, this is really, it's just well-delivered cycling put on by people who like cycling, watched in person by people who like cycling. You know, you think for American football fans, think, you know, Lambeau Field in December in the snow, you know, guys out in the stands with no shirt on, football players with no shirt under their jersey, just bare sleeves in 20-degree weather. It's that sort of romance and spectacle where everybody knows what they're trying to deliver and everybody who's watching is ready for it. It's just beautiful. Even if you have no idea what's going on in the bike race, which is usually a pretty tactically interesting bike race, it's still great to watch.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so that's the route. Let's get into this start list. The Eneco Tour is always a tough one to predict. It certainly has been the last few years because it's a race that tends to have a very small margin of victory, which makes the list of potential winners pretty long because, you know, it's often so close. And there's a lot of teams here with multiple options as well. That's another thing that factors in here. It's not just Chris Froome and eight other guys. Like you get the Tour de France, some eight very good guys, but It's one team with four different potential winners. Any one of them can go on the attack, and if you wins a stage from far enough out, that's it. That's the race, and that's actually happened a couple of years in a row here. Tim Wellens has delivered a really nice long-range attack for 2 years running and won the race. So let's start with him. Let's start with Tim Wellens. I love Tim Wellens as a rider. We chatted with him before the Quebec and Montreal races. He's very exciting to watch because he's always going out there and delivering these aggressive, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, moves. He's a guy I'm really concerned about with this team time trial, though, because Lotto Soudal doesn't have traditionally a very good team time trial squad. I mean, they got some big engines, but it's not their strength. And I'm a little worried that that's going to put him pretty far behind. He's still got a chance for sure, and I kind of counted him out last year because I didn't think he had that surprise factor anymore, and he went and won anyway.
Yeah, he's a strong dude.
It's just,
surprise is good, but watts are better.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I just don't know that the whole team has enough watts for this team time trial to put him in a good position. He's also, he's not the best individual time trial, so he's going to have a tough time defending his title, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I am wondering if this team time trial might feel more like just paceline practice on traditional Belgian roads. But if it is as much like a traditional TTT as you're saying, I think BMC has a tremendous advantage, just a whole stable full of horses there, including Rohan Dennis and Taylor Finney. But for me, the guy who we picked last week, the hashtag year of GVA, Greg Van Avermaet, I think, you know, he has done very, very well at a ton of races this year, but not as well as he wanted to do this spring. And I think, like we mentioned again in the intro, this is a great chance for revenge, and it's so hard to pick against him with the form he's got right now.
Yeah, with this team around him to set him up, and he's done really well in this race in the past. He was second last year. He was fifth in 2014. I mean, he's won a stage here. He's very competitive on these roads. I think we can expect him to compete again here. And if not, then Rohan Dennis, Taylor Finney, good options. Tom Dumoulin, another guy who tends to be pretty competitive here. He was second back in 2013. He was third in 2014. This time trial is really going to be great for him because he's good at time trialing. And we know he's in good form because he was just third at the Tour of Britain. The question is, how well can he hold up on these really Flemish cobblestones, that sort of thing? It's not necessarily his strength, but if he can get out to a big enough lead early on, then maybe he can hold on to it. He's certainly a good climber who can do the Ardennes climbs pretty well.
For me, another name we have to mention after the probably, would you describe it as shocking, the finish at Quebec?
It was only not shocking, and that seems to happen at Quebec. I mean, it's just these guys that go and they get pulled back in, and it's just that's how that race works, you know?
Yeah. Well, anyway, the guy we're talking about, Peter Sagan, the world champion, just masterful finish at Quebec. Find it on YouTube if you haven't seen it already. Clearly has the power and ability to do well here. He played GVA a little bit in that finish. So, you know, we'll see if Greg Van Avermaet is really on his game. I still think he's going to be faster than Sagan. But there is sort of a question of motivation here, too. Like, Peter Sagan is not from Belgium. These are big races for him. He's had some great victories here. He really breakthrough win at Flanders. But, you know, is he going to be that stoked about it in mid-September with a world championship?
Yeah, does he even need
revenge?
He did win Flanders after all.
Exactly.
Another team with a couple of options, actually maybe the team with the most options, Eddis Quickstep, they've got like four options. They've got a 1-2-3-4 punch here. Tony Martin, Zdeněk Stybar, Bob Jungels, Nicky Terpstra, all of those guys are going to put them way ahead in the team time trial. I think they're going to have a really great advantage over almost everybody except maybe BMC. And then who knows? I mean, Tony Martin's going to, I would imagine, do pretty well on that short ITT. So is Jungels. He can be kind of hot and cold, but if he's really going for it, we should expect him to do pretty well. And then Zdeněk Stybar, I mean, the Eneco Tour has been a really good race for Zdeněk Stybar. It was the first time we saw him really successful on the road. He won back in 2013. And then he ended up having a horrible crash at the Eneco Tour also, which was pretty spectacular, I think, the following year. This is a race that I think he wants to do well in because it was not the best classic season for Eddis Quickstep. I mean, we were asking questions about Eddis all classic season, and this is a chance for them to do well on, you know, home roads.
Another team we have to mention because they're a really good team, despite that one day of the Vuelta where they looked like a really bad team, is Sky. They've got some proven classics riders here. Geraint Thomas, Michał Kwiatkowski. The sixth stage of this event is kind of unique. It sort of combines aspects of Liège and Amstel Gold, which Kwiatkowski has done very well in winning one and finishing on the podium the other. Again, there's that motivational shadow kind of hanging over. Like, is this a big focus for the team or for any of the riders?
Yeah, I feel like given the riders that they have, I mean, the skill set that they have, if they cared, they could win this race. I mean, Thomas and Kwiatkowski, both E3 winners, both good climbers and good time trialists. This is a perfect race for them, but I don't really see them being as interested. I mean, they could prove me wrong, and I hope they do, but they don't really need World Tour points like some of these other teams do. Yannis Aguirre is a guy who I would really love to see do well here because Movistar and Benelux don't really go together very often, but Aguirre is an excellent time trialist and a pretty good climber too. So we could see him use that to take a victory here, rely on those abilities and just kind of survive over the cobbles. I think that's a possibility given how well he's been riding lately.
Michael Matthews, I don't really know how to frame him in terms of this race. Like, he is a guy who is sort of known as the person who takes out wins in these sort of smaller, tougher sprints. I don't know that he's really... I mean, he's obviously going to want to win. Every pro cyclist who can win wants to win. A lot of people who can't win want to win. But I don't know that he's really going to be targeting this.
Yeah, it's a tough question. For me, I wonder if Matthews is going to be maybe a little more aggressive here, maybe going for the overall, which probably too hard for him, but who knows, because he's switching teams next year. He's not going to be with Orica. That's an interesting situation there I'd like to know more about. He's going to Giant, and Giant is actually almost in the basement of the World Tour. They are, other than Dimension Data and YAM Cycling, which is folding, the last place team. And let's say Dimension...
But they're the best place team that got run over by a car in the middle of the season.
I certainly sympathize with them. I mean, that's for sure. You know, with Dimension Data, yeah, I was a little critical, but I don't really blame Giant for not doing well this year after, they all got hit by a car. The thing is, if Dimension Data does well in this race, if they nab some points, Giant could be in a tough situation. And I think, you know, Michael Matthews might know that. I mean, he might have, you know, they might have communicated to him, hey, could you do what you can? Because that'd be really nice if we could score some points here. So I wouldn't put it past him to go for the overall.
We've been talking about motivation a lot. I tell you one guy who is definitely motivated for this race, Trek Segafredo's Fabio Fellini. He's got a fistful of good wins. It kind of races around this tier. To win at an event, a World Tour event like this in Belgium, the heart of cycling, is really, I don't want to call it a breakthrough victory, but it's definitely the sort of thing that could build some confidence, get his name out there.
Fellini is like in the running for most versatile cyclist of the year. He won the points competition at the Vuelta. If you go look at his results and where he finished on some of these stages, he was involved in pretty much every kind of stage, and that that includes high mountain stages and a time trial. I mean, the serious 37-kilometer time trial, he finished ninth.
Yeah, but which stages did he win at that Vuelta?
Hey, man, the points, that's what
I'm
he
just
won.
I'm saying, did he, so, okay, all
hey,
right.
Well, all the love we show for his teammate, Giacomo Nazzolo, that's probably a sore subject for our friends over at Trek, you know?
Okay.
But I think this is a chance for him to actually take a win. I mean, that short time trial opportunity is an opportunity for him, and the overall, just the way he rides and his ability to do well on a variety of parkour. Edvald Boasenhagen is Dimension Data's best shot here of winning. He has actually amazingly won this race twice, which is kind of shocking when you think of how little he's done in the last couple of years in this kind of territory. But
he was in the final move at Roubaix this year.
If you go back 4 years and you put Edvald Boasenhagen of that period in the situation where he was this year with Matty Heyman as like the main competition,
yeah,
you'd be
okay.
Pretty disappointed to see that guy lose. Yeah,
it is true. The all of Sky's marginal gains seem to have been stolen from Edvald Boasenhagen and distributed to other riders.
That's exactly what happened. They just suck the lifeblood out of one or two guys every year and then discard them. Boasenhagen
they have vampires.
They have vampire
it's just
powers.
They come and they, yeah.
Yep. Well, anyway, he's got a good chance here. I mean, if he's in form, this is a really good race for him. I think he's a good time trialist in a short TT. He can sprint for those bonus seconds. I mean, I think if Dimension Data really puts their minds to it, they could actually get some World Tour points here. There's a number of other guys. I mean, this is a really wide open race. It is every year. Tony Galopin, Lars Boom has done well here in the past. We haven't seen too much from him this year, but this is a race he does well in almost every year. Michael Valgren, another guy I think has a chance with this kind of bumpy parkour. Also, Wilco Kelderman. Primoz Roglic for Lotto NL Jumbo was the surprise winner of the long time trial in the Giro and very, very nearly came in first at the opening time trial in the Netherlands at the Giro as well. With that kind of ability in the time trial, I think he's got a chance here. I mean, the time trial in the past was the decider at the Eneco Tour until they threw in a couple of more interesting
until
stages.
They made it awesome.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad race until they finally said, okay, I guess we should throw in a climb or two. But a guy like Roglic, I think he's going to hope for a traditional Eneco Tour where you can kind of coast after a good time trial performance. I guess we'll see. And then Andrei Grifko, I want to mention him because he's a guy who pretty much never shows up anywhere else in the calendar except at this race. And yet he's been competitive at the Eneco Tour for several years. And I don't really know why it's this race that he seems interested in doing well in. He was on the podium in 2013. He was fourth in 2014. But clearly it's an objective for him, the Eneco Tour. He was sixth last year. So don't be surprised if Andrei Grifko pops his head up to do well the Eneco Tour this year and then fades back into obscurity next year. Let's talk sprinters. The stage hunters of this race, I mean, I think other than the pure sprinters, anybody capable of winning a stage is like a GC contender in this race. But the sprinters in particular, there are plenty of really big names. I mean, all the big three, you got Cavendish, you got Greipel, you got Kittel, and they're all probably building up for Worlds. So I think this would be an opportunity for them to tune up. So probably they're going to take it seriously. And in particular, Cav, riding for Dimension Data and staring down a potential demotion, I would hope he's going to be motivated to do well in the many sprint stages this year.
And, while they're tuning up, I think there's a really good crop of second-tier guys who might be looking to... I have trouble calling a lot of these guys second-tier. I mean, you've got Fernando Gaviria, who is just... I mean, he's shown what he can do. He's been a little quiet recently. Caleb Ewan. Nasser Rouhani, very fast, very motivated. We've seen him cross the line first far more often than we've seen him win. I think recently that has been more unfair than in the past. I didn't
agree with his relegation at Hamburg.
You know, it's something that you see a lot in sprints. It was not the craziest. I can see why they relegated him. I don't know that it would have happened to, say, Gerard Scholik or to John Degenkolb, for example.
Okay.
But, you know, he's a fast guy. You have to mention him. Alexander Kristoff, always one of the fastest sprinters. He is not where he was last year, but still, I think for me, he's up there in the top tier. Giacomo Dazzolo, big favorite of the podcast. Love to see him finish well. Love to see him take a win. And Elia Viviani, Olympic champion. On the track, not the road, but still, very good rider. Always capable of slipping past these guys.
Yeah, Kristoff and Dazzolo both are guys who don't mind a little bit of cobbles, a little bit of climbs. I think that could suit them pretty well here.
Kristoff has won a race in Flanders before.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he has won. Was it Deronda? I think. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. One of those. Matteo Trentin also for Addicts. If Kittel fails to make a finish, Trentin's a pretty speedy guy as well. All right, so that's a pretty comprehensive look. We've named like 80 guys on the start list, so I think we can probably get into the predictions. I'm going to go with Van Avermaet to take the win. I think the BMC team time trial is going to set him up really nicely. He does okay in short time trials like this. And on the cobblestones, we've seen what he can do, and we've seen what kind of form he's in. I mean, he was really strong in Quebec and Montreal both. And a lot of other guys here might be getting tired towards the end of the year, but he's already proven that he's in good shape. So that's what I like about Van Avermaet here. I like Tom Dumoulin also to come on the podium here. I think Dumoulin could stand to maybe have a little more, you know, pure cobblestone classics riding ability, but and his team time trial might struggle, but I would imagine he'd get up there and get a pretty hefty advantage with the individual time trial. And then I'm going to go with Zdenek Stybar to maybe round out the podium there. Quickstep just has so many different options to choose from, but he, to me, seems like the best balanced, the most well-rounded, and the one who does well at almost every Eneco Tour we've seen him race.
I agree with you for the win. I like Greg Van Avermaet, but I see this race as very... I see it almost as a classic broken into segments. I see lead changes pretty much every stage. I think it's a really balanced race. I think we're going to see some really cool stuff, different people wearing the jersey. But yeah, I like Greg Van Avermaet for the win. Just, you know, all the reasons you said. He's shown incredible form this year. He's won stage races this year. I think I like Tony Martin in second place from EQS. I think the team time trial and I think the individual time trial are going to play very well into his favor. I think he's probably going to struggle, especially on that last stage with the circuits around the Moor. And then third place, I don't know, man. I'm gonna go with Sagan. He's a pretty reliable pick to just kind of put up there. He does all of these things well. I think he's just going to be lacking that little extra motivation and might not be super sharp in terms of form. Obviously, he's a threat almost regardless of what form he's in. But yeah, that's my podium.
Both of us have different ethics riders on there, which I think speaks to their, you know, general team strength here. I think I'm sure Lefevre will find some excuse for them not doing well if they don't land on the podium. But I think it'd be kind of embarrassing if with this team they can't land somebody on the podium, you know, on their home turf, which is pretty much what this is.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing with Lefevre also, he's almost unfireable. You know, it'd be like firing, here I go with the Packers again, but firing Vince Lombardi.
Yeah, you know, fair enough.
There is no what have you done for me lately.
Fair enough.
He is basically his own sector of cobbles. They're never going to take him out.
It's like they'll probably name a section after him, you know, at some point in the...
I'm surprised there isn't a classic Pat Lefevre.
Yeah, yet, right. But it has like the Von Pettigam, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so those are our predictions. We've done the route, we've done the favorites. I think we've given a pretty good treatment to this race, which, as we've said, is an underrated and usually quite exciting affair. So definitely tune in, if only just to watch these teams scrambling for World Tour points, which you may hate or you may love. I kind of like it. I kind of like the idea of that. So we'll be back.
It's certainly forcing importance onto these events.
Yeah, I think a lot of people hate that, but
well, I mean,
I don't mind.
This race deserves more.
It does.
Attention.
It deserves eyes.
Yeah. As we said last week, some of these races are really good.
Yeah, for sure.
And people haven't quite gotten the message.
Yeah, yet. They're not embracing them just yet. And I think you know, eventually, if we get enough manufactured prestige. Maybe they will start tuning in. We'll be back pretty soon for Il Lombardia, which is right around the corner, the final Monument Classic of the season. Until then, this has been the Recon Ride Podcast. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.